This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, we'll hear from Republican Mike Perrin running for State House in the 60th District, which includes the city of Kalamazoo. But first, we discuss the aftermath of the shooting death of a teenager in Ferguson, Missouri. The president of the Metropolitan Kalamazoo branch of the NAACP, Charles Warfield, says while the fatal shooting of Michael Brown by a police officer is tragic, it does provide an opportunity to discuss race, law enforcement, and other issues. Charles Warfield, thank you for being here.
Thank you for inviting us.
You issued a statement this week saying that the shooting in Missouri, which took the life of Michael Brown, brought attention to the consequences of overzealous police tactics. Can you give us some examples, maybe beyond Ferguson, of where overzealous police tactics have led to death, perhaps have led to protests and some of the problems that we saw in Ferguson?
Well, I think that many, I can't definitely name that one. I suspect they go on, and I hear word from other NAACPs that things come close to that. The problem, I think, is that we're sitting on the edge of something that could go off and start something, not just in a local community, but across the country, which Ferguson almost did, in terms of a flash uprising, so to speak, where people from around the country who have experienced this see a chance to get involved in something like Ferguson. For those of us who have lived for a period of time, we have seen this before. That kind of action has been seen before in this country and at a much higher level of devastation. Many people remember the California, uprising that took place, and it went on for 3 and 4 days where there were burning and looting and shooting at police and police shooting back. And it was really a horrible thing. Even back in the 80s, California blew up again. And even at the University of Oregon, where I was attending, a number of the students were coming down from California who had been involved. And these were not just black students. These were white and black students. Most people don't also remember, and as we go back that way, that some of the people who joined that group were a group called SDS, which were the Students for Democratic Society. And between the Black Panthers and other civil rights organizations, it was a pretty difficult time for those of us in the United States. I think we're on the edge. We could be on the edge. Let me say it that way. I hope we're not on the edge, but we could be on the edge of the cuspice of something like that being generated in this country. Not too long ago, the Kalamazoo Gazette, matter of fact, maybe the last couple of days, had something about poverty and the people who are just above poverty, and then they were just hanging on, and then everybody else falls below that. So again, we, as a community, as a country, we're dealing with a lot of folk who have no money and no resources. The other part of it is that when we look at where the money is in this country, the 10% of the people own 90% of the wealth, and nobody seems concerned about that. Not only do they have all the wealth, but they don't pay any taxes. But people don't seem to be concerned about that. They accept it and tend to take their frustration out on particularly poor people.
You have kind of laid out there a pretty broad
yes.
view of a lot of
right.
problems facing America.
Right.
At the
oh, absolutely.
And I suppose that someone may hear that and say, but I didn't hear much about the police in there.
Okay.
Is what happens with the police perhaps a broader symptom perhaps related to some of the deep-rooted problems
well,
in society?
Well, the police are asked to do a job which, in many instances, they didn't create, and also that it's difficult for them to handle. Because when people become overly frustrated and then police become overly zealous relative to what communities think they ought to be doing, then we've got a fire waiting for some gasoline to be thrown on. And so I have a real understanding of police work now that Chief Hadley has been in town, and we keep our communication lines open all the time, and as well as I think Deputy Chief Webster. We share information back and forth and talk about situations. I've been trying to get as many people to come to they have a community thing where they bring in people from the community and they show them what policemen do. And it's a 2-day period. And I went through it and I was really impressed. They take you to the shooting gallery. They take you to the fire, the place where they put out fires and so forth. And they let you know what police work really looks like. You get a chance to look at the dogs and what they do with them. And I've encouraged a lot of folk to go to that so that they have an understanding of what's happening. But that's a more educated group of folk who tend to come to that. The folk who are poor and who don't have that kind of understanding, it goes, all they know is that they're being mistreated. And so they strike back. And then we've got problems.
The Kalamazoo Department of Public Safety released a study that it did on racial profiling.
Right.
It found that
right.
Kalamazoo officers right. had been racially profiling
right.
In the city. Do you think that that is the sort of thing when a department commissions the study itself, puts it out there, blemishes and all, does that create a greater degree of trust or at least?
For me, it did.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because the chief called the NAACP and said, you know, this is what's coming out. We need to talk about that. We have looked at it. And as a matter of fact, we were called in when the study was going on and before the study was implemented. We were called in and we met with the people who did the study. And I think it gave us some assurance that there was going to be some credibility and no glossing over problems that might be that they might find. Because, you know, if they would have come out and said, well, there's none in the community, and everybody would say, yeah, we knew that before. You know, you started. We knew what the outcome was going to be. But when it came out, yes, you are. And there's some things you need to do about it. I think it gave, at least, let me speak for myself. It gave, I have had a lot of credibility come back into my mind about police when they were willing to, like, say, you know, we've got some dirty clothes here that need to be looked at and examined. And many of us have been called in to talk about that.
From what you've seen since then, have things gotten better?
Well, for guys like me, yes. You know, I mean, but for what happens is that poor people, their interaction with the police is, for the most part, not positive.
You do say in your statement that while the shooting of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri is tragic, it does provide an opportunity to create a dialogue.
Absolutely.
What would you like that dialogue to be about and contain?
Well, some of the things you and I have been talking about, that I think we have to talk about poverty. I think we have to talk about the whole question of who's poor and why. We have to talk about the pipeline from the neighborhood to the prison. And then we have to dispel the reasons why people end up there, because most people are willing to say, well, that's just who they are, because there are a number of theories that are very popular. The constitutional inferiority theory is one that keeps popping up. And that's basically said, they're born that way. You know, how are you going to help them? Why are you spending money on them? They can't help it. They're born that way. There's another one that says that not only are you constitutionally inferior, but you have accumulated environmental deficits, which means over time, you go backwards rather than forward. There are three theories that people throw folk into, particularly minorities and particularly poor people, and they say, and those theories just dismiss that group of folk because they say there's nothing you can do to help them because they have these three deficits. That's pretty tough to overcome. That's pretty good. Now, the one piece that oftentimes at least begins to move toward some level of equality is where are the votes? You see, if all of a sudden you have people beginning to wake up and see my vote, but poor people don't think that way. They say, what is it going to do for me now? We got a black president now, and I'm as bad off as I was when he wasn't president. We had a white president, and maybe we were as bad off as it was then. So a lot of them are concrete kind of folk. Has my situation changed because I went to vote for somebody? And so a lot of our folk, for instance, NAACP and other organizations are out trying to register people to vote. Well, folks will stand in the middle of the door and say, yeah, I voted last time, but I'm still in the same house. I still don't have a job. I'm still not able to feed my family. So a lot of what you have to do, I think, is say, this relates to this. One of the things they can say is many of them can, but the connection has to be made for them. The reason why you're able to go in and get health care when you couldn't a few years ago is because this happened. Then all of a sudden they say, oh, now I see. Okay.
Is it possible in this country at a very polarized time, I think it's fair to say, to have a honest and open dialogue about race?
Among folk who believe that, I mean, I don't think it's possible with some groups that they don't want to hear that.
Is this who you're referring to before, the people who believe inferiority?
Yeah. The constitutional inferiority people say, well, you all are born that way. Some of my relatives when in World War II were over there, and people kept looking. They were soldiers in Germany, and the people kept looking at me, and they said, why do you keep going by? They said, well, we understand you all have tails. And my cousins, some of them came back and told us about those stories that happened to them, that they'd been told by the white soldiers that were there, okay, white American soldiers that were there. So there's still a lot of that wives' tales kind of stuff about who we are and what we are and why we are like we are. You know, I've had people call me and say, Chuck, this is so-and-so-and-so-and-so. And we went, I said, hey, how you doing? And they said, you still heading to NAACP? I said, yes, I am. They said, man, you can't do anything for them folk. I mean, see, and so some of us have lived long enough to know what that feels like even here in Kalamazoo, because there were places when I was growing up, but we couldn't go.
You can't help them folk. I mean,
about other black people.
Other black people. Yeah, so you're separate from the other
black
people.
Yeah, you're separate. You're part of the middle class. What are you doing hanging out with that crowd? You know, and sometimes it happens. It comes from black people. They said, Warfield, over here. We're over here.
We the middle class.
Yeah. Here. We the middle class over here. What are you doing over there? I say, I think that's where I came from. You know, if I can pull out, and I wore cardboard in my shoes, and I did all the other things to, you know, hand me downs. I never had a new pair of anything. I got a new pair of shoes for Christmas, maybe. But somebody took the time to say, this guy's worth working with. I ended up at University High School. And see, that was white people who said that when I got through at Lincoln School, where there were two schools, Roosevelt and Lincoln. When I got through at Lincoln School, and I kept getting moved up, all of a sudden somebody said, this kid has got somebody needs to do something. Next thing I knew, I'm up at University High. There are only two blacks of us up there on the campus here at Western. Okay. And I said, Dad, what happened? He said, and he named the person. He said, they saw something that they wanted you to come up there. Because the other thing they said, they didn't want them to have the experience of just being an all-white school and no blacks. So as a result of me being there, four or five others came in, my brother came in, all that kind of thing. But there are people. See, I don't ever, you know, dismiss people of a different hue than I am. See, I just, then that makes me as much of a bigot as they are toward me. I mean, if I say, well, you know, that's all white people, that makes me guilty too. So I know what it feels to be on the other end. So I just think that it's tough sometimes, but otherwise I just think we have to work at it.
Charles Warfield, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much for having us.
Charles Warfield is the president of the Metropolitan Kalamazoo branch of the NAACP.